listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show. I'm Bruce Cameron, along with Wayne Fritz.
Hey, Bruce.
We have a wonderful show for everybody today. So without further ado, I'll just jump right in there, Wayne, if you don't mind. And I'd like to introduce our special guest, Kim or Kimberly. Now, I'm not going to try to pronounce your last name because I know I'm going to mess it up. So if you want to say your last name, it'd be great.
It's Dipadova.
Dipadova. Okay, very good.
Yeah. Hi, everybody.
Hello, Kim. Glad to have you on the show. Let me kind of start the context of, as many of you know, I do a lot of federal prison coaching and consulting for defendants and families and inmates. And so I'm so pleased that this was one of those rare instances where just pure coaching and a little bit of guidance really, really paid off. So I couldn't pass on this without having Kim come on the show and share her experience. So I guess, Kim, if you don't mind, kind of share a little bit about your background and how kind of you were thinking you're making a decision that ended up into a very bad decision and kind of walk us through the first part of it.
Ooh, you're talking about from
Yeah, you thought you were doing a favor, for somebody. I believe you said you put something in the mail for somebody.
I did, yes. I made a bad choice, kind of got caught up into a whole mess, I done a favor, dropped some packages in the mail that ended up being not what's
bad stuff
in it. You know, it's messed up. Yeah. So I got caught up into a conspiracy charge. That's what got me caught up. I was a caterer out in LA, so I was working constantly, and it just one of those things. I mean, a conspiracy can get you caught up in so many.
And I know. So here you are. You're already, you're living in Los Angeles area. You were running a catering business that was, I love the name of it too, that 24-hour executive catering. It's really good. But you were catering to movie stars, movie sets, all the entertainers. You're doing multiple six figures a year on your own in a kind of a small business, but a very successful small business, what I mean? Mm-hmm. And here you do this favor, and then the next thing you're involved in a federal conspiracy, right?
Yes. I mean, it can happen to anybody at any time. You never know. And I lost everything I had. I mean, because of it, ended up giving me 108 months.
Okay. Let's stop. So did you get a target letter, or did they bust down your door, or what happened? How'd you know you were?
They was coming to my door, but when I got wind that I was on a indictment, I called them and, I was like, please don't do this. I have a 3-year-old here. So yeah.
Right. And so then did you have a paid attorney, or did you go with a public defender?
I ended up going with a public defender. Probably shouldn't have, but I did.
Well, let me say this. Public defenders are known for cutting deals, but a lot of times in the federal system, they win 99% of their cases.
It's true. And, I've done a lot of research on it, so I did. I went with it, with one. And because the case was out of North Carolina.
Right.
And I was in L.A., I had to. I wanted to find somebody out here because I thought it might do better, finding somebody that has lunch or whatever with the judges or the prosecutors.
Right. And so I would assume they had you dead to rights to what you did in terms of mailing the packages. You're in a conspiracy. So you had to plea, right? You took a plea, correct. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
And so you took a plea, and did they sentence you the way your plea read, or did they sentence you above or below your plea, or...
They sentenced it where it read.
Okay. And how many months were you sentenced?
108.
108. So you began your sentence in what year?
In 2016.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. How many different institutions?
Let me say too that
go ahead.
Because with all this, I was like, I'd never been in trouble before. The worst thing I had on me was like a worthless check from back when I was like 18 for like $18. It was something crazy. You know, no speeding tickets. My background was great, and I still got the 108 months.
Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Right. You're a first offender by all practical purposes, mm-hmm. a mom, middle class, right. no criminal record. You know, you're not out yeah. there on the streets slinging and doing all this crazy stuff, and you still got 108 months because yeah. of it's a conspiracy, multiple people are involved, and I mm-hmm. assume that somewhere some amount of weight was, you know what I'm saying?
Correct.
It was, and so you get, it's like being the driver of a bank robbery car. You still get the credit for robbing, right?
You do.
As if you had the gun in your hand, you get sentenced. Wow. So you started your federal prison sentence in 2016. How many different federal prisons did you have to go to?
Oh, goodness. Well, before they even sentenced me, you know, I was in L.A., you know, for a few weeks.
Were you downtown at the Metropolitan?
I was.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And then, you know, middle of the night, they came and took me and shipped me to North Carolina,
right.
which was a ordeal. You know, you had to go through Oklahoma City and all the little, you know,
right.
overnight stays in between. So it was a whole process getting even before I got sentenced, just getting me to North Carolina.
So did they fly you to the transfer center in Oklahoma?
Yes, they did.
How long were you in the transfer center in Oklahoma?
I think I was only there for about a week okay. and a half.
Okay. And then you went from there to Mecklenburg County Jail or something?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, you can tell I'm an old hack at this. Wow.
I know. I can tell that.
I'm on the fly, baby. Okay. So anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. That's mm-hmm. not funny. All right. But anyway, so you're at Mecklenburg mm-hmm. County. And how long are you in jail before you get sentenced and finish your case?
Well, I went there and I want to say it was like March, and then I got sentenced in October.
And then you went from Mecklenburg County to what women's prison?
I went back to Victorville.
Oh, wow.
They sent me. Yeah, so I had to travel back.
All the way back.
That
is literally Interstate 40 all the way to the end of California. Unbelievable. You went to the exact yeah. opposite end of the country. Okay.
Yes.
And so, wow. So you went to Victorville, which is a camp, right, for ladies?
It is. Mm-hmm.
And how long were you in Victorville?
I was there until I got moved. I want to say it was January, maybe January 2nd or 3rd. I got moved to Arizona, to the camp there.
Stafford?
Gosh, my mind is blank right now.
It's Stafford. It was January.
Arizona?
Yeah, Stafford, Arizona. Was that this year you were in Stafford, Arizona? Or
no, in
2016.
Yes, 2020.
Oh, 2020. Okay.
2020. You know, I went,
and that's
they
where
moved
you,
me there to do the RDAP program.
So you're going to do the residential drug abuse treatment program, which would have given you a year off your sentence, but then COVID hits, right?
COVID hits. And actually, because they waited so long to move me, I wasn't even going to get the whole year because I couldn't get into the program until a lot later. So I was actually going to go, I put in to do a dual diagnosis. So I was going to go to Carswell behind the fence and do the RDAP, but do the dual because I could get in quicker.
Right.
By doing that. But yes, then COVID hit and it all,
wow.
you know, we went on lockdown and it was just.
So you guys were locked down, can't do anything, limited phone calls, no visits. For anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So at what point did they have your name on a list as candidates, or did you apply through your case manager?
No, well, a little bit of both.
Okay.
You know, I was, because I was first FSA eligible, I mean, you know, when I was a minimum, I met all the requirements. When they started doing the list, you know, I put in to ask for my my eligibility sheet to show that I was eligible for it, you know. So I started asking my case manager for the copy of that. And she said, well, you are minimum, but you haven't met your 50. You didn't make the list. I met all the requirements, the 50% of my time. I was eligible, but she said I didn't make the list.
So let me stop. So for our listeners, so what happened was when the COVID-19 pandemic hit, our population pressures, we had to reduce the amount of people in federal prisons. And the one way to reduce the people in federal prisons was to identify candidates that were low risk, okay? Inherently, by their nature, and I'm not being sexist, but women are lower risk than men, okay? Also, only 6.5% of the federal population is women. So again, there's always a need for bed space for female offenders. Also, the healthcare costs and healthcare concerns for women in a correctional situation are way, way greater and more involved than men. And I can tell you from experience, I did 6 years at Carswell, baby. I opened up a women's all level from the admin max to the medical to the camp. So, man, I tell you, I've been there and I know it firsthand. So you weren't on the list, but you had all the low risk factors that made you eligible for kind of what's called a CARES Act. So thank God for the Trump administration, but they started the First Step Act, and then the CARES Act came in to push this through. This is part of the CARES Act. So how long did you have to wait? And then how is it that you were able to finally be able to be eligible?
Well, because I met all the requirements, you know, I think I ended up having to wait. It was probably about a month before my name came up. But while I was waiting, I was going ahead and being proactive, and I was like starting my administrative remedies because I met all the requirements. You know, so I was like,
explain the BP7, 8, 9. Explain what that is a little bit. What'd you have to do?
Well, I started with my BP8, which, you know, goes to the, actually, I guess it goes to, you put it to your counselor first, your case manager, and then you do the BP9 that goes to your warden. And during all this, you have to wait your 20 days or 30 days in between each one.
And right.
Then you go to your 10, BP10.
Which goes to the region.
Yes. And then I guess the 11 goes to Grand Prairie.
Right. That forward slash one.
Right.
So
go ahead.
And so what did the 11, did they finally say okay, or what happened?
My name came up on the list prior to getting my response back.
Okay.
So, okay. You know, I was like, I'm eligible. I was writing this, you know, why am I not on this list? I've met all the requirements, you know. And I guess it was all new because, you know, there's some people that came in with 6 month sentence, you know, right when they was bringing people in, and they were still like, they're making this list. So everybody's like, why am I not on the list? You know, I've done all this time and met everything, all the requirements. So.
Yeah. Every case is different. Okay. So now you finally make the list. There you are in Safford, Arizona. What happens next? Do you have to fill out paperwork? What happens next?
You know, the process for that was she called me in and she told me that I made the list. So I had to go in, sign some paperwork. She said it all happened pretty quick. You know, she said you have probation will have to go out and check your home. You know, they wanted to make sure you had a room to yourself so you could quarantine when you got there and different things, you know, to this nature.
Right.
But yeah, she said, I'm putting it in, submitting it. I'll call you after we find something out. So I think it took them about a week, maybe. And then she called me back down and told me that probation approved it and that I was eligible. So they put me in the quarantine then for 14 days, you know, taking your temperature night and day.
Yep.
make sure everything was good. You know, and she was like, they told me, you know, gave me all the stipulations that I'd have to take a bus from Arizona to North Carolina.
Gosh, and that's a long bus ride, man.
Right. But then, you know, on the 14th day, the day of release, when they called me down to R&D, it wasn't like right. that. They had me a bus ticket sitting there ready. I mean, not a bus ticket, a flight ticket, you know.
Oh.
So it was kind of, it kind of worked out good.
The plane ticket. Okay. Good for you. So you flew directly to Charlotte? Did you have to connect through Dallas or what?
No, I did have to connect. I did have to connect. And then, you know, I think I had like an hour and a half layover or something.
Okay. You have to go to Charlotte. And now you've got to touch base with the halfway house in Charlotte, right? Because otherwise you'll be on escape status and the United States Marshals will be after you. So how much leeway did you have before the Marshals were going to come after you?
I don't know how much leeway they give you, but I know when I got there, it was like pushing like 8 minutes before, 8 or 10 minutes before that time that I was supposed to be there.
Before your deadline?
It was like, it was cutting it close. I was like,
okay. So now you report to a place called a halfway house in Charlotte, North Carolina. Now, folks, let me explain to you. She's going to a federal halfway house, but it's not run by federal employees. The Federal Bureau of Prisons, sadly, has to outsource federal halfway houses to private companies, private correction companies, Dismas Charities, Cornell, Salvation Army, City of Faith, Volunteers of America, just to name a few. So those are just some of Dismas. You know, those are some of the vendors, and these are for-profit companies that run these federal halfway houses. But Kimberly here has to serve the remainder of her sentence in the federal halfway house, or at least under the responsibility of the halfway house. Because she was a COVID-19 release, that enabled her to be fitted with an ankle monitor and then sent home. So tell us about that process. How long did it take you to get the ankle?
Oh, goodness. Monitor. Well, when I got there, it took a while, you know, going through the process. They check all your bags just like they would any other time.
Right.
You know, and my sister was allowing me to stay at her house. So, of course, she had to meet me down there. And got down there. They didn't have the bracelets, wasn't charged. They didn't have the chargers for the bracelet for me. Because I was like one of the first ones in this halfway house, in this RRC. So, you know, I ended up leaving that night without the bracelet on. And I had to go back the next day when they got me in, which is a 2.5-hour drive now. You know, 2.5 hours.
Really? Night.
Wow. So I came home that night, and then the next day we had to get up and be back down there because they had to get the chargers in for me. So that was a little process, you know.
So then they put the ankle monitor on you, right? And then you got to go back to your house and live at your house, right? Your sister's house.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so I guess let's talk a little bit about did they tell you that you had to find a job within 14 days, or they said they didn't want you to work for 6 months? What was some of the initial stipulations?
Oh no, you had to find a job. You had to be looking for a job the whole time. You have so many call-ins. I mean, they 4 times a day I had to call in to them. 4 times a day at least they called in to me.
Wow.
Every time that's later after we get passes going and stuff, but yes, so initially it was at least 8 calls a day coming and going. So
it's like you're in jail, but you're in home jail.
Right. Which is a blessing, you know, so much of a blessing, but yes. And as far as work goes, you know, I started looking for work, and because they have to get like approval, come out and check your job. I mean, mm-hmm. it was really a struggle trying to find a job to start with, because they had to coordinate and come out and meet them. And of course, I wanted a merchandising job so I could be in different places. You know, I wanted to choose my job to fit what I was doing, right. You know, my needs at the time.
Sure.
So yeah, I didn't get the first two jobs, and then, you know, it kind of started easing up.
Okay. So, and tell us a little bit about, you said you had survived a divorce, you had custody of your son, and tell us, can you share a little bit about what that was, that triumph and that struggle was like?
It was pretty hard. You know, me and my husband had been together 16 years, and it was just like, you know, so, and he struggled with my son, trying to take care of him. So he was so little. But yes, when I came home from the halfway house, I found out my ex-husband was living with a woman in my house that I've been paying on for 20 some years. You know, my son wanted to stay with me, of course. So I did. I started court proceedings and ended up going through a bad divorce. I ended up fighting for custody of my child, which I got full custody of.
Did you get full custody of your child while you were in custody of the BOP?
I did. Yes, I did. I spoke to my case manager about what I could and couldn't do, and she supported me 100%. You know, I even wrote a little, you know, progress report, if you call it, or a review for me. To help me in court. So yes, they was very supportive of me. It may not always be that way, but you know, each of them are different, but for me, they had me back.
That's a blessing. I know that, you know, look, being in home is a lot better than being in a federal prison per se out in Arizona, but yet at the same time, your son is close, but yet so far, like for instance, you really can't go to ball games and those things, and because you have to get a pass. So explain to our listeners a little bit about what that's like, that you really can't do, even though you're in society, you're really not. Go ahead.
No, that's true. You're not. I mean, you're here, at least you're at home, but you know, when you have children, and it could not even just children, could be your family members, but for me, my son, you know, having custody of him, it was still a struggle, because you have to put passes in to go to work, and you do these 2 weeks at a time, so you have your schedule 2 weeks in advance for whatever you're going to do, you know. Right. And I got him playing sports. I mean, he's 10, he was 8 at the time, so you know, he's playing sports. Okay. After school activities, anything I could get him in, trying to let his life be as normal as possible, you know. Okay. And, you know, there was so many times that they didn't put the pass in, or, you know, I remember the first ball game that he had, you know, I called to leave, because you call when you get ready to leave, and they're like, I'm sorry, your pass is not in. You know, and then you can't take your son to the first ball game that he's so excited about going to. You know, so it's real important to have those passes checked, for one, before Friday gets here. So if you have anything scheduled for the weekend, you know, you want to make sure it's approved.
Right, right. And just a lot of other things that you really can't do, because you're really bound to the house. Well, now, okay, so you had been out on quite some time. Now, before you got all this fixed, what did the computer say your release date was versus what it ended up being?
Well, of course, initially it was October 11th, 2023. That was my initial release date. And then, you know, like everybody talks about the First Step Act credits, because I was eligible for those, and had the paper saying I was eligible for all those. You know, they had called me in March of 2022 and said, I have your new release date. It is 10/11/2022.
Okay. Who said that?
The director at my RRC in Columbia, South Carolina.
Columbia. Okay. Is that before we talked or after we talked?
That was before we talked.
Okay. So keep going.
I wasn't too concerned about anything because they called. I knew I had it. I had my date. I mean, I was a happy go camper, you know? I was like, ooh, I got my date. Everything's good. So I've just, you know, from March until, what, by October the 6th, I was just kind of, you know, kick back, reading the forums, you know, keeping up to date with everything, making comments and, you know, but I didn't have no worries. I was like, it's all okay. It's going to be good.
And then what happened? And then the date changed back, right?
It did. Yes. It went back to the October 11th of 2023.
Okay. So, okay. I know. So you thought you were coming out. There's a glitch. Now there were two types of situations. And I don't know if I told you this, but there were people that there was an error in the calculation that went through, but some people hadn't completed their questionnaires. Okay. Mm-hmm. They specifically, ironically, they hadn't done their psychology questionnaires of anger management, hostility, family, antisocial peers, or maybe they were drug decline. Okay. Mm-hmm. And if you didn't do one of those questionnaires, it pulled your time back. Okay. And so it took a while. So anyway, so then you called, or somehow you were part of a Facebook group that I have, right?
Yes.
And then you called me.
Yeah.
And then I said, hey, go ahead and check in with these folks and see if you can get some phone numbers. And so now I'll let you tell the rest of the story.
Well, I tell you, I was so devastated when I got that phone call and saying that my date had changed back to October 11th of 2023. I didn't understand. It was just like my whole world came tumbling down, you know?
For sure.
I mean, so I did. I went through, I got Bruce's number. I called, left a message. Bruce called me. You was calling me back within, I don't know, it all happened so quick, but like 8:30 at night, you know, within an hour and a half of me calling, you know, Bruce was calling me back and it was just like, I couldn't believe it. I was so thankful that he called me even at such a late hour because I was so upset over this, you know? And you immediately just stepped up and started giving me some answers and giving me guidance and got me on the right track, you know, tell me what I should do with steps. I mean, you was all over it and it just gave me a sense of peace that I hadn't felt in a long, you know. It gets me teary eyed right now thinking about it because you was there, you know. I needed that.
I was there. All right. All right. So then who's the first person you caught? You know, so I told you some things and that's the coaching part. And then you did your part and you reached out to who first?
I reached back out to my case manager. I'm sure first, because you know, that computation data sheet is very important.
It sure is.
So I was reaching out, trying to get that and reaching out to get some numbers. Again, because the halfway houses, they're government workers and they don't really understand it. And I didn't understand this, you know, even though I've been under them for 2 years and 4 months, because I didn't try to learn about it or follow or want to understand it or felt like the need to understand it, you know?
Right. So was it the case manager that gave you those three phone numbers or how'd you get those three magic phone numbers?
She did. She, when I called her, she gave me those three numbers.
Awesome. Okay. So you talked to her. Now, was she the one that found it on the computation sheet or did somebody else find it?
Oh, no, she didn't know. She didn't see my computation. She didn't know what a computation data sheet was. No clue.
That's incredible. You know, on the planet that should know what a sentence computation data sheet is, it'd be your own doggone case manager. Incredible. So she gave you, it sounds like, two Raleigh numbers and a number in the Mid-Atlantic region, that 215 number. I'd never forget. You had two 919s out of Raleigh and one 215. Yes. Never forget. Well, anyway, who'd you call next?
Well, I started Friday morning. I started calling all those numbers. I mean, I was calling all the numbers that I had. I mean, I took off from work Friday and I just stayed on the phone, you know, making
the calls.
Yes, making the calls to anybody I could. And then I started calling the director and, you know, I think I followed up with you and I wasn't really getting anywhere with these numbers. Nobody's calling me back. Nobody's answering the phone. You know, and you directed me to just anybody you directed me to, I reached out to.
Yeah.
And then some. I mean, right. I was reaching out to anybody and everybody.
Do you remember I'll come back in. So who was it that you reached out to that finally said, hey, here's your deal? Do you remember who that was?
I don't know if I'm supposed to say this, but you told me to reach out to my...
Well, just say their title. Just say their title.
Oh, okay. My case manager in Victorville.
Okay. Oh, the original. Her. Okay.
The original case manager.
Okay.
And it took several phone calls to get through to her. You know, and I had to, they didn't want to get me to her initially. It's you have to be persistent for sure.
For sure.
You have to be persistent because... You know, they're not there to help you, especially when they find out that you're an inmate.
Whew. You know, which you're the lowest form of life.
They just want to shut you down right there.
Oh, yeah. You know?
So you do have to be persistent. And so, yes, the case manager at my facility pulls me up and she's like, Miss Deepadova, I have your computation sheet right here with your release date. You are to be released today. Me is what it shows
today, yeah.
And I'm like, right, that's what I thought, you know. I mean, and that's so I followed the steps that you told me to do to make it, you know, I followed them to a T, and it was just man. Like,
you know. I mean, and here's the thing, Wayne, is that she was already the she was in a prison in Arizona. They could have told her that same information. She had to go back to the original prison she was in before then in Victorville, California, to get the information. And so then the Victorville case manager sends a fax to the federal halfway house in Charlotte.
Correct. Right. Yeah. She was, I think I got a hold of you right after I spoke to her. I reached out to you and, right. And yes, she ended up emailing that computation data sheet to the RRC,
right,
where I was at, and with an email. I wish that I had it laying here saying this: Kimberly Deepadova's release date is this inmate needs to be released immediately.
Right, and so I was able to do some stuff at the regional office and just send over an email saying, "Hey, be on the lookout for this inmate." reportedly her release date is today. Documentation will be forthcoming from the RRC, you know, and sure enough, the RRC connected with the region and then, you know, they got to key you out of the system. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
To release you. And that's kind of the role I did for 13 years. My last 13 years in the Bureau of Prisons. So
that's exactly how you know the steps you got to take and what you have to do to get it done. I mean,
yeah.
And
yeah, I tell you though, it's a God thing. You know what I mean? I've never seen anything, at least in my shoes, right? I know you're the inmate doing the time having to suffer, but I mean, you know what I mean? But once we started going, it went pretty quick, didn't it?
It really did. I mean, it was a long few days, but you stayed by my side. I mean, anytime I messaged, called you, you was right there. And I mean, that helped me so much mentally, right, emotionally, physically. And then, you know, it's hard to, a lot of people can't take time, just a day off from work to try to make phone calls, you know, you can't. And the way I say it, time is money, no matter what it is, whether it's your time, my time, losing work time.
Yes.
And that's why it's so nice to have the two of you here to help in this situation, you know, because I mean, you know, people, you know, the ins and outs of it. I mean, like I say, I got shut down so many times. Arizona, that case manager didn't have nothing to do with me. She would, you know, and I called there twice.
It's yeah. Like, and the funny thing is about Safford, right? Safford, a lot of these places used to be like a men's penitentiary and a men's camp. Mm-hmm. And so when they convert these facilities to women, it's like, oh, shit. You know what I mean? It's a women's facility. And, man, they just hate it, you know, because, honestly, women are I'm telling you, they're a little they're different than they are with the men. I'll just say that, okay? Yeah. I'm sure you're a very nice person. But just as a whole, when you get 1,000 women together, that's a different type of a situation than with men. But anyway, right? So these staff are already, you know, upside down or whatever, and now they got to deal with this. And so I can see how sometimes they were less than helpful. It doesn't mean they should have been less than helpful.
No.
All the way back.
Mm-hmm. Right, because I mean, what I've learned now is, you know, certain things you should be allowed to have and you should want to get in your possession, you know, and certain things you should, you know, ask for on a yearly basis. If you've been out on home confinement for a long time, you know, hey, I would try to figure it out and ask and get copies of this.
So, oh, I know. I mean, so it's kind of interesting because, and had you already hit your home confinement date anyway, on your regular home confinement date, or you hadn't hit that yet?
No, I hadn't hit that yet.
So it's kind of funny. So you're out on a CARES Act release wearing an ankle monitor date, and then you convert. At one point, you would have converted as a CARES Act case to a regular home confinement case. Correct. And you would have actually caught up. Right. Your time would have caught up to just a standard, regular issue, run of the mill inmate on, you know what I mean? Home confinement. Right.
That date would have been June of 2023.
Right. And so people ask me, hey, can I get off early and this and that? I'm like, no, you're going to do your time. You're going to finish your sentence out there all the way to what it says. You know what I mean? It's just a different umbrella that it's under. But well, Wayne, what do you think about all this federal prison stuff, man?
I'll tell you what, Kim. First of all, it's nice meeting you.
You too.
I can tell already that you are a very, very nice lady, and I'm sorry that you know you stepped on a snake with your left foot there and got bit. But I'll tell you what, what an attitude you have, and the persistence. I mean, when it's like in anything, I don't care your background, where you came from, or wherever anybody wants to do something. And in your catering business, I'm sure it was the same. That's why you were successful, because you don't give up. Mm-hmm. And I see that in everything that you and Bruce have just talked about. And I'm just, first of all, I'm just proud, so proud to meet you. And second of all, what I want to just ask a couple questions is, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
So you're still in LA. What are your plans?
She's in Charlotte now.
Well, you're in Charlotte.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So what are your plans now going forward? What are your goals for the next 12, 36, 72 months, 5 years?
I do have some. You know, I'm hoping to start me a little studio up here. I love photography. I'm going to keep things simple. I'm not going to go crazy like in LA. You know, I'm going to keep it toned down a little bit and just enjoy my time being, because all my family's here. So I'm going to spend some family, you know, spend time with family and just.
I've got good friends out there in Raleigh. You live in good territory. Like there's a little place outside of Raleigh,
Goldsboro.
I got good friends in Goldsboro, and boy, I'm telling you what, there's some good eating up your way. Best pecan pie I ever had. So, and I love your accent. You're a beautiful, beautiful lady. And one thing I believe in. I mean, I'm sorry you had to go through whatever you went through. But you know what? Listening to you and Bruce and listening to you step through all of that.
Yeah.
It just proved to me that, you know, God never throws you into a fire without a fire extinguisher. And he was with you all the way. And I know that probably didn't seem that way sometimes, but look at you. You are amazing. I mean, you are amazing. I don't know how else to say it. You are an amazing human being.
Well, she did the work, Wayne. I'm making no mistake about it. I mean, she did the work. I kind of gave her, I mean, it was picture perfect. I gave her kind of the plan, and she executed the plan, brother. I mean, flawlessly.
And well, I was so emotional. If Bruce hadn't have been there to guide me, you know, because that's a really devastating thing when you expect it. And that's why I say, I mean, I had took notes every time we talked, and I followed those notes to a T. You know, I made sure I crossed my I's or crossed my T's and dotted my I's.
How old is your son?
He is 10. And let me tell you, he is an amazing young man. He has went through this with me every step of the way, every ball game he had to miss, every horse carriage ride he couldn't go to, every birthday party he couldn't attend. He's been a trooper. I mean, he really has. And I tell you what, I just have to say this, because October the 11th, after we finally got all this done, I went to pick my son up at school, and he had already told his teacher, I may leave school early today because me and Mama's going to Charlotte. And when I went to pick him up, he came walking out of the school with tears in his eyes, saying, I know we're going to Charlotte. I know this is happening. You know, it was just such a blessing. I couldn't believe it when he came out with tears in his eyes. You know, a 10-year-old thinking about going through this emotional roller coaster with me, you know. Yeah. It was like,
so when he saw you, he knew you were free at that point, right?
He knew we was going to get that bracelet off. Yes.
Yeah.
yes.
Well, I'm just so proud of you, and what a story. I've been sitting here for this last 45 minutes or so, just goosebumps the whole time. And I'm going to say, Kimberly DePadova, you are A+ in my book. I mean, you're going to be in my prayers. You're going to be in my prayers on the thank you side, because I'm going to give God a lot of thanks for being able to have met you and hear your story. And I wish you all. And photography, I love. That's always my favorite too.
Why are you not catering anymore?
Well, it's a little different out here. I probably could in the Charlotte area, and I could probably, and who knows, I might do little stuff. I might do some weddings or something.
Okay.
I haven't really decided.
Okay. I'm just curious. I mean,
I've done it for so long.
Right.
It's a lot of work. And then when you get told you're hiding behind a bogus catering company, we only want to get there, right?
Some of that stuff, they just say that because they got to do it to sell the case, you know?
Yeah,
I mean, it's very personal, but you can't take it personal. It's like, you know,
yeah,
I'm sorry. You know, I mean, I don't know what to say. You know, we're the guys like me that work in the system. We're the last guys on the street. We're the last people, right? I'm the last piece of styrofoam you got, you know. And it paid off this time.
It did. And I thank you both so much. I really do. I mean, you have no idea what it got me through for those 5 days, you know. And still, I mean it's just such a blessing to have you there for what you do.
No, please. I mean, I want to thank you. I mean, look, I was just doing my job. I don't want to take too much credit here. I really was just, I appreciate it. I'm feeling really good about myself today. Thank you very much. But other than that, no, really, I was just doing my job. Okay. And I was, you know what I mean? I have a certain knowledge, and I gave you that knowledge, and I gave you that plan, and you did the work, and you executed. So it was a team.
Team. You know,
But you're the star player. You're the lead actress. I am merely a supporting cast member of your play called Your Release from Federal Prison. And I'm so happy for you, because probably had you not reached out, you'd still be there 100%.
Absolutely. I believe that. I know that. That is so true.
Funny how God works. I'd like to say that, I'm just such a good guy, I'm available. It just so happened when you would call, I had a few minutes. I am busy.
Thank you, Jesus.
I'm like a one-armed paper hanger, and I'm not going to get sued by the one-armed paper hangers of America. But, I'm so busy. And so when you call back, okay, what is it? You know what I mean? Okay, gotta go.
Right, and I'm sure you probably get tons of calls. Situations similar or sound the same. And
I tell you, I'm going to have about 50 minutes of voicemail stacked up like sardines after the show, right? But anyway, thank you so much for coming on the show, sharing this experience. As fresh as it is. Has it been a week and a day now? Week and 2 days?
Oh, no. Tomorrow it'll be a week.
My God.
Tuesday. Yes.
Beautiful. Got you 6 days into your freedom. That's always so precious, you know.
It is.
To talk to people early on in their freedom from custody. And so what other words? We got about 3.5 minutes. What other words do you have for women or people going into the system, or what words of advice or encouragement? What would you like to say? Open mic.
I don't know. Keep your family. If you have children, try do everything you can to keep those family ties going, and definitely you advocate for yourself. And you have to do the legwork on a lot of things, and don't be afraid to reach out and ask for help either.
Don't be afraid to ask for help. Mm-mm. Right. Don't be afraid to ask for help. And you know what? That took a little bit of courage to call me, I think. Yeah. It took some sort of guts or something for you to pick up a phone and call somebody.
Right, because you never know. I didn't know. I know I followed you. I joined when I first came home, and I've been a member for almost 2 years, I guess. Yeah. Ever since, because I like to keep up with it.
Right. And you know what, folks, this is a lesson for the coaches. My site, Jose's on there too, but my site provides a lot of information, And then from time to time, I'll say, well, call me. But I'm not out there pandering per se, or panhandling per se, the services. We're there as a community mm-hmm. service, I think, first, because honestly, I think I have people from Families Against Mandatory Minimums calling me. I think me and Jose are probably the leading authorities on the First Step Act. And again, I know I'm sounding arrogant today, but I'm like the head waiter at Golden Corral, Wayne. Man, I'm the freaking man. Anyway, well, good. So
you guys came through, and my bracelet came off on my day that I was supposed to get because of the help that you done.
Yeah, well, again. All right, we need to wrap it up. Kim, thanks for coming in to the show today. It's a pleasure. So proud of you. Folks, this is just a ray of hope for all y'all in federal prison or coming out of federal prison. Can't wait for you guys to see the show. Kim will be able to be accessed through my Facebook page on Early Release from Federal Prison CARES Act, and you can interact with Kim on the Facebook page there. Otherwise, we're not going to tell you how, because she's got to do some federal paper. And she needs not to be disturbed by y'all, but you can come visit on the Facebook page and go from there. I can be reached at conciergecoach.net. And Wayne, how can folks reach you?
Wayne_515@yahoo.com. And Kim, thank you so much. I'll tell you, you're an inspiration to every person. Persistence. I don't care what situation they've been in or going through. If they can have your persistence and your belief and your family desires and values, they can get through it.
Okay. All right.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Well, that's it, folks. Have a blessed week and come see us next week on the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. Stay safe, everybody.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz, only on LA Talk Radio.